Hey everybody, this is Joe Anthony of Gregory FCA with our friend Charlie Pakert, 35-year veteran of the business and financial news media, and more relevantly, spending the last 15 years covering the RIA channel and all the happenings in the wealth management arena. Charlie has written for several publications, some of you might know from his investment news or financial planning days. Today he's contributing to Family Wealth Report and RIA Biz. Charlie, thanks for agreeing to this conversation with us. And let's get started with the question that a lot of people like to know when they're getting to know our friends in the media. Like, tell us about your start covering the RIA and wealth management business.
Well, thanks, Joe. I'm happy to be here. I started about 15 years ago, and I didn't know much about the business. I was an experienced business reporter, and I was hired by Jim Pavia at Investment News, who I think a lot of your listeners might know from Investment News, and now he's at CNBC. And, you know, to their credit, they did the hiring based on evaluating that I was a good reporter and a good writer and that I would learn about the industry, as opposed to being very conversant about the industry and learning to be a good writer and a good reporter. I think that it's definitely the former and not the latter that's going to produce the best results. And in my case, it was very interesting and stimulating because I had to learn about a new industry, and it was just good timing because the industry was really coming into its own at that time. It was growing, as it still is, but really beginning to expand. And what was especially interesting to me was seeing the emergence of aggregators and platforms like Dynasty as a platform, United, Hightower as aggregators, and really following them from the beginning almost, and watching them grow. And it was a great way to learn about the industry because they, of course, had to deal with individual RIAs and they had to serve their needs and provide services. So it was a great way to learn about the industry. And I think I was very fortunate to come in at that time.
And taking a look at some of those big trends, it's amazing to me, you hit on something. What was taking shape as you started covering the space, Charlie, is obviously a very dominant theme today. We see more and more firms in the roll-up and aggregator and platform business. And it seems to be the way of the future as the RIA industry turns into a more of a professionalized, institutionalized pathway within financial services. One of the big things that I look at in my role, obviously, is with media relations. And as these firms take shape and try to tell their story, grow their brands, I have to ask you, as a veteran journalist, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see RIA firms, or frankly, their PR teams, make in engaging with you as a member of the media or with the press in general?
So, you know, it's a combination of what they aren't doing and, of course, what I think, and I think many other reporters and editors think they should be doing. So what a lot of them don't do well, I think, is to establish real relationships with the reporters and editors to get to know who they are and what they need. It's very basic. It's not brain surgery. I understand that public relations is under a lot of pressure and they're getting paid to get the word out for their particular clients. We all understand that. And I know the time is precious. However, I really believe strongly that they need to do more, and most of them don't. They need to understand what the reporters need, in addition to giving, you know, to providing the press releases and access to interviews of the executives for things that the firms are doing. That's table stakes. That's, yeah, we understand that. That's what they are paid to do. And we understand that's their primary role. However, you have to go beyond that. And if someone from a firm or a public relations agency can talk to the reporter about the industry knowledgeably and provide them with information beyond just their own firm, that is invaluable. Yeah, I know you're promoting, you know, such and such new service or new thing or new hire or whatever. That's fine. You know, if it's newsworthy, we'll cover it. But if you're going to give me a tip that's not self-serving, that's about something else that's newsworthy, boy, am I going to give you, you know, I'm going to keep that in mind for sure. And believe me, every one of my colleagues will as well. So I think that's really important. And then some other basic stuff, you know, making the execs available on a timely basis when the reporters need to talk to them and the public relations or media relations person does not have to be on the line. I know in some cases they feel it's necessary and there's compliance involved. I don't think that's actually, it has to happen that way. But for the most part, I think that the ones who get the best publicity, get the best coverage, don't have somebody on the line. These are smart executives. They're not going to tell you something that's going to hurt their firm. And, you know, the best ones are going to tell you things that not, aren't necessarily all about their firm exclusively. So I think that's something that really needs to be done more.
Hey, Charlie, it's no wonder to me as a participant and observer in the industry that some of the firms that have been able to extract the largest enterprise value for the firms are those that have strong command of the press and the media relationships. We saw Joe Duran continues to be a beautiful spokesperson for Goldman Sachs under the new regime after he sold United Capital. And certainly we saw up close and personal how he was able to use his certain finesse with the press to be able to support the brand equity. Other than those name brands out there, what RIAs have you seen do a good job in telling their story and working with the media that you think in a way that not only does it help you do your job, but you think it's supportive of their recognition or place in the industry?
Well, most of them who do that, of course, are going to be well-known or fairly well-known. Obviously, the smaller ones don't have the budget to do that. And one of the pleasures about working, covering this industry is to be able, unlike Merrill Lynch or the big wirehouses, where you have to go through three layers of PR and it's all, you know, very formatted and very stilted and very, very canned. You know, one of the beauties of covering this industry is to be able to call up, you know, John Smith, who owns an RIA and in a certain city, and, you know, talking to Mr. Smith directly. And I would encourage if any of those smaller firms or mid-sized firms are listening to, you know, take those calls and, you know, answer the questions, talk to the reporters, get to know them. You know, the bigger ones, of course, have more needs and have more things going on. And I think Dynasty is a good example of a firm that has done a really good job. They have a real pro doing their communications, Sally Cates, and you know, she knows what reporters need and are looking for. Obviously, she's going to tell them what's going on with Dynasty, but she's also very conversant in the industry and is going to, you know, as is Cheryl Penny, and is going to, you know, be conversant and be pretty candid about the industry as a whole. One of the firms that may not be as well known, but you know, certainly does a great job, is Westcott Financial Advisors in Philadelphia. Grant Rawdon is a CEO and very accessible, very candid. And, you know, he's a straight shooter and, you know, is going to cut to the chase and tell you things that are relevant to the story. Bob Oros, very similar at Hightower. Carl Hagner at Fiduciary Network and Immigrant Partners. He is also terrific. Adam Birnbaum at Buckingham, Michael Nathanson at Colony, and Brent Brodesky at Savant. To me, you know, those are good examples of CEOs who are accessible, who are knowledgeable, who will speak to reporters, you know, on the record, and you know, give them what they're looking for, and sometimes more. So, which is, you know, that's really important.
Well, obviously, accessibility, being forthcoming with the information, and understanding that the timing is everything in the news side, certainly are ingredients for success. When you take a look at building stories, coming up with angles or elements or things that haven't been covered specifically yet, in order to be able to give yourself an edge as a journalist or reporter, what facts or story elements or themes make you more, or frankly, less likely to pursue story? Like, what could either enhance your interest or take away from it?
Well, you know, it's a basic test of being what story is newsworthy, and that is you know, it's a judgment call, but based on experience, you know, these days also sometimes data, although that can be very misleading in terms of SEO and clickbait and things like that. Just because you know, Warren Buffett is in the headline, it may attract clicks, but doesn't mean it's a newsworthy story. But a good editor, a good reporter, you know, knows what is important to their audience. I think that's really key. I mean, you know, I certainly saw that with editors like you know, Pavia at Investment News, Scott Wenger at Chelsea Emery at Financial Planning, you know, Bruce Kelly at Investment News. You know, reporters and editors like that, you know, they know what's important for the audience, and what's important is what's of consequence to the rest of the industry. You know, not just internal. If it's simply internal, if it's just a new appointment, you know, getting a new team, adding a new service, yeah, you know, it's okay. It's you know, it might be interesting to somebody else, maybe to a rival in a particular competitor in a certain market. Fine, and it could be included depending on the time and space of the publication, but no, probably not that newsworthy. But you know, one of those things, if it affects the rest of the industry, and certainly, you know, if it does affect competitors in their market in a consequential way, then you know, then your ears prick up and you're interested. You know, if it moves, then you know, if you feel it moves the needle, if you feel that you know, based on your experience and your knowledge of the industry, you know, that other executives and advisors in the industry think that that is an important story, then you're going to pursue it. But if it's simply self-serving, then it's less so.
And Charlie, what do you think of this sort of, I'll call it a bifurcation of approaches within the wealth management focused media, where it seems like some publications or some editors will steer towards trying to get news or a story out first, while others will hang back and try to tell a different side of the story than the press release or associated announcement might have said, or maybe effort to take a more complete look at the story as opposed to rushing a story on for time sensitivities. I think as my position, I think there's obviously room and value in both approaches. But what do you think is really driving that from your context as an insider? And what do you think best helps you do your job in terms of, on the business side, getting reader interest, but also on the journalist side of telling the story?
Well, you know, of course, it depends on the publication's business model. As you mentioned, I'm currently contributing to RIA Biz, and their business model is to go under the hood. It's one story a day. It's an in-depth look at a particular either news story or trend or topic or particular executive. And they do a very good job, and they've been very successful doing that. That's a particular business model. Others, the bigger, you know, dailies putting out a lot of stories like investment news and financial planning and Think Advisor and wealth management, they have to do both, and they have to be get the news out on a timely manner, and when they have a chance to try to go in depth. We were very lucky when Scott and Chelsea were there to be able to do both and to both get out the news releases, hopefully break stories, but also go under the hood. One of the stories that really worked out well for us at Financial Planning was something that, it was hardly a breaking story, but it was a good example of, like, wait a minute, what's going on right in front of you? I had been going to, as reporters do, going to a lot of conferences, and I noticed that most of the people I saw at conferences were white males. And one day in a story meeting, I said, I'm looking around at conferences and I'm seeing mostly white males. That should be a story. And they let me go and do an in-depth story on lack of diversity. And we ended up winning a Folio Award for best single article in the business finance area. I think it was called Why Don't More Advisors Look Like Lizette Braxton, who is a very good African-American female advisor. And people like her were very rare when you were at conferences. So, you want a mixture of both. And for most publications, I mean, some are just more wire service types. Again, RIA Biz, more in-depth. But the rest, I think, is a good mixture of both.
That's good context. And let me shift gears for a second. So you had part of your career spent contributing to publications outside the RIA and wealth management specific publications, and then a good chunk of your career within. Do you get the sense, either by your own reading or chatting with colleagues and friends, or just in general, how do you feel that the general business finance media actually gets the RIA channel? Do you feel like there's a good representation of that track or slice of the business in the media, or do you think there's still a definitive leap between specialist publications and those publications in terms of representing that they really understand the space?
Yeah, I think it's shocking that the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal don't cover the RIA business in particular, that industry, better, more in depth, with more knowledge. It's just absolutely shocking to me. I think the good news, the silver lining, is that there's still an opportunity to, tell the story and to get their interest, and they're certainly, they wouldn't be jaded by it because they don't cover it that much. They're just not that knowledgeable about it. The CNBCs of the world, they have editors like Pavia, who came from Investment News, and Lori Konish, who covers the industry, who came from the financial planning stable of publications. They understand it much better. But it is shocking how many don't understand it. I think there's a real opportunity for advisors to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and so when you see that gap, I mean, you see some of the publications starting to cover RIA space a little bit more, particularly if there's big news, like we saw, obviously, Goldman's purchase United Capital yield some articles around that. When Focus Financial went public, they put that platform on the radar for the Wall Street Journal type publication perspective in a bigger, more meaningful way. But all in all, I think there's still a big separation in terms of the depth of coverage. Interestingly enough, is RIAs in general are small businesses in terms of the kinds of revenue they kick off. I mean, we're not talking about $100 million revenue enterprises. And so I think the focus and the commitment to the coverage is sometimes categorized not so much on the big space that RIAs represent, the trillions of dollars in assets they represent, but more so on the size of individual companies, which I think limits the coverage. Let's move on here. So when you're looking at the last 15 years of your work and focusing on wealth management RIA channels, can you think back to one of your favorite stories you've written or one of the best gets you've had in terms of news capture or interviewees that would really encapsulate why you do what you do and why you love covering the industry?
As I mentioned previously, I think the diversity story that I won the award for, is a really good example of combining both, nuts and bolts business, but also going beyond that to something that impacts society. And that's one of the great things about this field is that, it's not just manufacturing widgets. It's helping people. It is making life better for people. And I thought that story was a good example of how all that can be combined. And I think, the other areas that were very satisfying were, as I also mentioned, seeing the rise of these firms and the evolution of the Uniteds and the Hightowers and the Dynasties and what's happened to them over the last decade or so. I've been following that very very closely, and they've gone through a lot of changes. I'm very proud of having chronicled those. I did a big cover story on Joe Duran and United just before the Goldman sale was announced. We broke the story that he was, in negotiations to sell, and that he had hired an investment banking firm, and we spoke to Joe, but we also, I was also able to really go in depth and, look at what the firm had done, what it had done well, what it had not done so well, and talk to people who both worked there and used to work there and competitors and, really dig deep and get under the hood. So that was quite satisfying. And also covering M&A has been very satisfying for me. I really was one of the first to cover it. I mean, it kind of began just coincidentally. I was lucky. The M&A boom really got started as I started covering the industry, and it's just mushroomed. It's huge now. Private equity is in, and I've really covered that every step of the way and kind of pioneered that coverage. So I was very proud of that. And then most recently, for RIA Biz, I was able to do a story on the PPP loans, which was also a combination of a news story and an opinion piece. And, we took a look at the good, the bad, and the ugly. A lot of it was something that some firms needed. In other cases, there was a discrepancy between what firms said publicly and what they told the government. So, we were able to, take an honest look at that. And it's been a very, fast moving, evolving industry. And it's been a lot of fun covering it.
And one last question for you. I would say my first 10 years in this business, it seemed like the faces of the coverage were centered around star managers, mutual fund managers, Peter Lynch's, the Mario Gabelli's of the world. And more of late, over the last 5 years, I feel like the faces of the industry have shifted to RIA firm heads. These are the new icons, the new, popular faces in the press. What do you think is behind that shift? And not obviously mutual funds have faded and RIAs have emerged, but do you see from a journalist perspective that these images and statures are being pushed? You think it's just a natural extension of a brand or of a founder to take on that role? Just what's your impression from the media side?
I think you really hit on most of the important points involving why, you know, why that, that coverage has increased so much, Joe. Yes, mutual funds have become such a commodity. They're not a novelty anymore. You know, the fact that, coming full circle, as we discussed at the beginning of the interview, RIAs have emerged. You know, they're the fastest growing part of the industry. They're getting bigger and bigger. They're taking more and more market share from wirehouses and banks. And, you know, they have emerged. And as a consequence, there's more interest in them. Obviously, the trade press is covering, you know, that growth. Who's growing the biggest? Who's growing the fastest? It's, you know, it's the Uniteds. Now, of course, it's sold to Goldman, but Joe Duran is a perfect example, somebody who is, you know, very media savvy. And it's a combination of, sure, you know, he was being promoted, and that's fine, but he's also a really smart guy who, you know, who gave very good analysis and gave good quotes to journalists about the industry and stuff that wasn't stale and was, didn't seem canned. Some of it was repetitive, but a lot of it was very fresh. Cheryl Penny's another good example, you know, very media savvy, but, you know, he's serving a growing part of the market, and he, his own firm is growing. So, yeah, I think they're good examples of the kind of attention that these firms are getting for good reason. You know, it's still relatively new. I mean, not brand new at this point, but they're still growing and expanding. You know, they have something to say. And, you know, they're very articulate in how they say it.
Well, I appreciate those insights, Charlie. Now let's leave it on one last thing. A lot of people are doing a lot of extra reading during the age of COVID, where they're spending a lot of time on their couch. You have a great book out there about college basketball. Let's wrap up here with a quick plug on that book. Tell us about it, how it came about.
It's a book that was published a couple of years ago, and the full title is Madness, the 10 Most Memorable NCAA Basketball Finals. I co-wrote it with Mark Mailer, and we looked at what we thought were the 10 most memorable games, not necessarily the most exciting or the, you know, the most quote-unquote greatest games, but a perfect example of our selection would probably be the 1966 title game, Texas Western versus Kentucky. It was a good game, maybe not the greatest game, but it was a really important game because it was the first time in a NCAA championship game that one team was comprised of the starters were all African Americans, Texas Western, and the other team were all white players, Kentucky, and Texas Western won. So it was a big deal. And the thing that we enjoyed probably most about the book was not just what happened on the court, but the backstory, how the game impacted society and what the backstory was other than the game, the story behind the game.
Well, appreciate the sharing, Charlie. Thanks for all the great insights today. Look forward to reading more of your great stuff at Family Wealth Report and RIA Biz. In the meantime, all the best as you cover the industry in the months ahead.
Thank you so much, Joe. It was a real pleasure, and it's a pleasure working with you. Thanks so much.